This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Wait, Rick, come back. Come back, Rick. Wait, Rick. We've got questions. We want to talk.
We want to talk to you, Rick.
Oh, in case you just tuned in expecting to hear Mariner baseball, you just missed Rick Riz there talking about the game. It's still in a weather delay out there in Baltimore, game one of their series with the Orioles. And you've got Wyman and Bob here with you, so you win either way, really. But this is a situation we'll keep an eye on. We'll see what goes on with the weather. It doesn't sound like it's going to turn anytime really soon. So it sounds like we'll be with you for a little bit at least and carry you through until things get going, hopefully. But I was curious in this game, Dave, to see what we were going to get out of Justice Sheffield. Because as we talked about before, again, we might have a bunch of people that are just now joining us. But if you just went one by one with the starting rotation, you got two starts out of Marco Gonzalez that were just flat out bad. Flat out bad. They just were not good. Okay, so then you move down. James Paxton was a guy, or Kikuchi, I guess technically, was your second starter. Gave you two good starts. One great one. The first one, 10 strikeouts. Second one, 6 innings, 2 runs. A very good start, so you feel good about that. Then you get into Flexen. First one was surprisingly good. I think we had low expectations based on what we saw in spring training. And then this last one was not good. Not good at all. But they overcame it. They found a way to win that game. And then you move on to Dunn with 8 walks. You move on to what happened to James Paxton, who's no longer part of the rotation with his injury. And you've had more disappointment than success so far at this point, I would say, with your starters. So I was curious because Justice Sheffield in his first start, not good. 5 innings, 8 hits, 6 runs, 4 of which were earned, 5 strikeouts and 2 walks. Not what we were expecting. He was really good last year. A lot of people felt like he could be in that, should have been in that Rookie of the Year conversation along with Kyle Lewis. But a really promising year. But we all talked about, okay, well, what does he look like through an entire season? Well, he's only got one start under his belt, so I'm not judging him. We're just going on what we've seen to this point. I was really excited about the idea of him bouncing back and having a nice solid outing in a park that's frankly tough. That's a hitter's park out there in Baltimore, and I don't know, you know, what kind of factor the weather is going to play in all of this in terms of hitting, but it's a bit of a task out there in terms of keeping that ball in the ballpark. I was really interested to see what he was going to be able to do, and hopefully we'll be able to see him tonight. But I'm not sure what was catching your eye going into this game, but that was sort of priority number one. Want to see the bats still go and everything we had seen in that Minnesota series. But the biggest question mark or anticipation for me was, all right, how does Sheffield bounce back from that first start?
Yeah, well, and then the other thing that's sort of unsettling is that the two known commodities in the starting lineup, or I'm sorry, the rotation, one got hurt and the other is having a really rough start, Marco Gonzalez, and James Paxton, of course, being the guy who got hurt. And so now you have a bunch of guys that still have question marks I'm okay with that. I mean, to me, that's what it's about. Those are the growing pains of having a young team. You know, you get Flexen in here, guy lost 50 pounds. You know, he played in the Korean Baseball League, didn't look great during spring, and then comes out and has a great start, followed up by a bad one. You know, same with Justice Sheffield. You know, I was prepared for that part. I just wasn't prepared for what's going on with Marco Gonzalez. And maybe that's not fair. I mean, again, I'm going to be glued to the TV the next time he comes up. But the most disappointing part is the Paxton thing, because you feel like, okay, at least 2 of the 6 you can pretty much count on. They're going to have bad outings here and there, but you know that they're proven commodities in this league and can do it, especially with Marco with the walks. I mean, that's the part that's really frustrating and kind of worrisome. But the rest of it, I kind of figured, yeah, they're going to go through, you know, maybe one of them drops out. Maybe Flexen isn't the guy they think. Maybe it's Sheffield. Maybe it's Dunn. But, you know, you kind of expected that. They've got some young guys that that they can bring up, a bunch of first-rounders that they've drafted over the last few years. You feel pretty good about the future. But it's about the present that, you know, the guys that you knew were established in that rotation that have, you know, had not had success. That's the part that's unsettling to me.
If Marco went out there and had another – let's just say maybe not disastrous performance, but just didn't look like we were used to seeing him. Would you worry after that? Would that be enough? Or would you? I think we're all confident in his demeanor. We're all confident in what a bulldog he is, and how we hear about how much self-reflection is involved with him, that he's the one to beat himself up. And so you don't worry about a guy who's not going to put the work in, but Do you worry about, all right, is there just something off mechanically? Is he physically okay? I mean, it would be something we weren't used to seeing, a stretch like that, if he were to throw up another one of those starts, three in a row to start a season.
Yeah, I would worry. I would, because what is Marco's top end? 91, maybe?
Yeah, 91, 92 every once in a while. But, yeah, you're right there.
I mean, you know, if you have a guy that can power through some of the problems with, you know, 95, 97, then you feel okay. But everything is about location with him. And it makes you wonder if people are maybe kind of figuring it out, or I don't know. I don't know what the reason would be, but I don't think that's going to happen. I really don't. I feel like, you know, this after those two starts that he had there, he's going to figure something out. He's such a competitor. He's so fiery. I don't think that it's going to be anything psychological. I just think he seems like kind of a guy with a temper, which I like about him. But, you know, it's just mentally he's got to get things right, and hopefully he's getting it figured out, you know, in these few days off and on this road trip.
Yeah, he's – and as far as, like, teams figuring him out, I think he's too established at this point. I don't think it's anybody figuring anything out about him, because you look at him. I mean, he's been in the league since 2014, obviously. Didn't get much of anything done in 15 and 17, and 16 was off because of the surgery. But you look at him, he had, you know, 29 starts for the Mariners in 18, 34 starts in 19. He went 16 and 13 that year, 13 and 9 the year before. ERA is a 4.399, then 3.10 last year in 11 starts where he went 7-2. So I think he is who he is at this point. I don't think he's a secret to anybody, but he's sort of like Jamie Moyer, not in the way that he throws a little harder than Jamie did, but not a ton. He's a location guy. He's got it. If the command is off at all, he's vulnerable. He's a guy who can be hit because of what you say. He doesn't have 97 to blow by guys. If he doesn't have his location, he can get in the vicinity and get them to chase, and they're not going to catch up to it. He just doesn't have that luxury, unfortunately. So if he's not on his game for whatever reason, physical, mechanics, mental, whatever's going on, he's a guy that can get touched up in a very big way, which is what we've seen. And the walks are to me, the tell. It's not about that it's a mechanical thing, that his command is off, that he's usually so precise in his command and his location, and the fact that he's got five walks in two games compared to seven through 11 games last year just tells you that his mechanics aren't where they need to be. I have not heard a peep about anything physical going on with him. So to me, it's more about, all right, him sitting in a room with his pitching coach, looking at film, going, okay, here's what's going on. You're doing this, or you're doing this, whatever's going on. They're going to identify it. And we've talked about pitchers being so, I don't know, fragile in certain aspects physically, but I think they're fragile, or they're very delicate in that the tiniest thing can be off in their delivery. Just the tiniest thing, the way they're landing with that front foot, or the way they're holding their glove when they any type of little minuscule thing we look at and go, okay, what's the big deal, completely throws them off. We've seen that with James Paxton over the year, where he will sit there and analyze every movement in his delivery, every single thing, and if one thing is off, his command is gone. And it's amazing how precise and how, I guess, delicate that whole thing is.
Yeah, you're right. It is in every last little movement. And, you know, we were talking about how when Paxton went down with that injury, was it Luis Torrens or was it Tom Murphy? I can't remember who the catcher was, but he was just all over it. Like, he knew exactly, oh, there's something wrong here, because, you know, he's watching every little move. And, you know, these are things that I think your common baseball fan can't really recognize, you know, of little things that are just slightly off. The other thing would be, you know, I've been in two different times come to mind. One was when I was at Stanford, and the other was in Seattle, where I had a slump, and the feeling of breaking out of it is one of the best feelings in sports. The one at Stanford, I remember it was me and the other inside linebacker, and we were missing tackles, and the coach was on us, and we decided, you know what, maybe we should just go out and have a couple beers and just kind of just relax a little bit. We're overthinking it, because once you get into it, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, you start overthinking every last little thing, and especially when it comes to pitching. And you mentioned all the different movements and thoughts and everything. So sometimes it's that, and then sometimes it's just that you got to fail. I got yanked from a game in Cleveland my second year. It was a string of like three games where I just kept missing tackles. I was, you know, making errors and things like that. And it was just getting benched that really was the, you know, cold bucket of water dumped over my head. So, you know, I wish that for Marco, because that is one of the things where everything's fine physically, but mentally, that's the difficult part. And I have a book, The Mental Game of Baseball. And, you know, I got that book because who's the first rounder that never worked out here that always looked sad at the plate? His name escapes me. Yeah, Dustin Ackley was talking about that.
Always looked sad.
He did. I was like, why? He just always looked like, oh, geez.
That's just his face. He's like Eli Manning. It's just, that's how his resting face.
Yeah, that's a good comparison, actually. But, but yeah, and, you know, that's such a big part of baseball, much more than football. I mean, football, you can just power through certain things, but I feel like in baseball there's all these little movements, and you see guys making changes in the off season that's like, you know, one little, oh yeah, I'm stepping 6 inches further down the mound or something like that, or maybe it's only 3 inches sometimes. I mean, it's just so, it's everything's so technical about hitting and pitching. So, you know, that hopefully he gets to that point where he's able to figure that out. But I'm kind of, I don't want to say worried, but I'll be anxious in that the next start with Marco Gonzalez.
It's weird. I've got to be honest, weird to hear about a linebacker in a slump. First of all, you don't really hear the word slump used in football, right? I guess you could talk about a team is slumping. Or even that, it's just not a term you really hear associated with football players. I could see maybe somebody who's got the ball in their hand, a quarterback's in a slump, man, he's been off, his timing's been off. I could see that. But for somebody who's not dealing with the ball per se, like a linebacker, it's interesting to hear you talk about being in a slump. Like, you're just, what does that mean? Does it mean you were missing assignments, or you were just making mistakes, or you didn't wrap up, guys were getting through the arm tap? What was happening?
Well, it just playing poorly. I mean, yeah, all of those things. And then, you know, you miss a tackle, and then you start grinding over that. You know, the old saying, don't let the same play beat you twice. You know, you got to let that go. And that's the mental part of it. And then, you know, it one thing leads to another. And then all of a sudden, you know, we always talk about this with rookies. You know, you tell rookies, look, don't worry about making mistakes. If you make a mistake, make it going 100 miles an hour. Going 100% with your hair on fire. Don't sit there and think about every last little thing. And we saw a little bit of that from Taylor Trammell, like when he got picked off of that base and in Minnesota. And then he didn't realize it was that was ball four, and he had to go back and check with the umpire. Just overthinking things, just not in a flow. You're not just out there letting it happen and just playing and pulling the trigger and just letting it loose. You're hesitating over every last little thing. Did I make a mistake there? And then is that something where I'm going to get in trouble? I always thought about, oh, that's going to look really bad in film. That's what my thing that would go through my head was, like, I know that the coaches are going to analyze this over and over, and it's going to be in front of my teammates, and everybody's going to see me get run over or miss an assignment or miss a tackle or drop a pass or whatever. And you just overthink it and you just grind on it. So, yeah, those are totally different sports, but same concept, you know, that you're just not playing well, and it's psychological. It's not physical, you know, and during those times, there was nothing wrong with me physically. And a lot of times, if I had an injury, you know, I would have, well, not an injury, but, you know, something that's bothering you, you kind of, your adrenaline kicks in, and sometimes it can make you play a little bit better. You know, you have to sort of steel yourself against those kinds of, you know, those kinds of thoughts and things like that. It makes you a little bit sharper, kind of hones you a little bit. So, but yeah, that's, I think it's similar in the fact that the psychological part of it, that's what I always associate with a slump.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. It's just, it's interesting to hear it in football. Just not, you hear it with baseball all the time. Slump. Yeah. The guy's in a slump. The guy's slumping. It's just, it's part of the vernacular with baseball. You just don't hear it with football. Yeah. We talked about, you know, sort of what we enjoyed watching with this Mariner team earlier when we were on before the rain delay. And for those that hadn't tuned into that, one of the things we didn't mention is, and I know it's a phrase that gets thrown out there, and I know some people are even going, what does that even mean? And we hear Scott Servais throw it out there and Jerry DePoto, controlling the zone. You hear that all the time, control the zone. And you're like, all right, what are you talking about? What does that mean? What does that look like? And you're seeing what that looks like now. Because this team's ability, especially as young as they are, and I know I keep harping on that, but that's the truth of their lineup. It's incredibly young and inexperienced, yet you're seeing a tremendous amount of patience from guys who aren't hitting well, yet they're getting on base. I mean, you can point to Jake Fraley, who's only played 5 games, yet in those 5 games, he's got a .526 on base percentage. He's walked 8 times. But he's batting 100. So he's still providing opportunity to be driven in. He's providing opportunity for the guys behind him to plate him and still do something offensively when his bat is ice cold. He's finding a way to get on base. You look at Taylor Trammell, leads the team in strikeouts. He's got 16 strikeouts, but he's got 7 walks. He's hitting .185, but he's got a .353 on base percentage. Those are two young, inexperienced guys. Ty France, a little bit more experienced, not a ton more. He's got a .439 on base percent. Now he's hitting .324, so he's hitting well. But his on base percentage is right there. And you look up and down this lineup for guys that just maybe are scuffling at the plate, but that on base percentage is bailing them out and providing opportunity for this offense. So to me, that is a very big positive. Even though you're looking at the average, going, man, .185. This guy's hitting 100 yet. One's got a .526 on base. The other's got a .353 on base percentage. And that, to me, just speaks to a level of maturity for guys that just don't have the experience of battling through, you know, a slump at the plate or a slow start at the plate. They don't have that history. They don't know how to get out of it. This is what they're going to reflect on years down the road when they're talking to somebody else going, yeah, when I was a rookie, I'll tell you what, I was really having a hard time, you know, finding a gap out there for that ball to fall. But I was finding a way to help my team still by getting on base.
Yeah, especially Taylor Trammell. And really, it started out in the bottom of the 8th inning in the first game, where he draws a walk, and I just thought for sure he was going to be swinging at everything that came over the plate, and he did it so well. And it's funny, we talked to Mike Blowers last week about how nervous he could see that he was. He was trying to, you know, play it cool and before the game and everything, but then once he ran out on the field, it kind of, you could see physically just his shoulders slump or something or tighten up a little bit. And he still is able to do that. So especially him, and you're right. I mean, you look at the walks, only Fraley has more. You know, he's got 7 walks. So a lot of strikeouts, but still, I'll take that. And haven't had any problems in the field defensively so far that I'm aware of. I don't think there's maybe a throw's been offline or something like that, but been really good there. So yeah, it's just, I love seeing it, you know, and it's kind of, Ty France has a little bit more experience, same thing with Fraley, but especially for Trammell, for him to be able to do that. Like to see that average get up, you know, .185, but still, a couple home runs over the weekend, and the one was crushed.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the one that was torched and tattooed, I believe.
torched, tattooed, and what was the other one? It was a rocket. I think
yeah,
is what he said.
Yeah, rocket. Yeah.
That's such a great call.
Oh,
but
I love it.
He's got a really good-looking swing, too. Taylor Trammell. I love watching him. And maybe that's just the lefty bias. I mean, I'm not a lefty, but left-handers just, they always look great up at the plate. Their swings almost always look great. And, you know, it seems more of a rarity when a right-hander has got a really pretty swing. Great hitters. Yeah. But they don't, they often, I mean, you look at somebody like Giancarlo Stanton. I think he's got an awful-looking swing. But the guy mashes it 500 feet. I mean, he's a phenom up there. But I watch him swing, and I'm like, ugh, that's not a great-looking swing. You know, but you look at Trammell or just about anybody from the left-handed side, it's just, I don't know what it is. But, yeah, he's got a nice-looking swing. It's just a matter of him, you know, him controlling the zone, which he's done, as we just touched on, 7 walks. But, you know, maybe the eagerness will dissipate a bit now that he's got a couple games with, you know, back-to-back home runs. He's gotten his first hit. He's gotten his first home run. Maybe some of those milestones, if you will, now that they're out of the way, that he's off the schneid, so to speak, with, okay, you got your hit. You finally did it. Okay, you got your home run. You finally did it. You've driven in runs. You've sort of checked all the boxes now. So maybe that takes away some of that anxiousness up at the plate of, man, I'm, you know, this is my first crack at the big leagues. I got to get a hit. I've got to contribute. And I could feel, you know, maybe there's a sense of relaxation and he can find his rhythm now that he's gotten those things out of the way.
Boy, they got some studs coming up here in the outfield. I'm looking at Kyle Lewis. What is he? 6'4", 220. You look at Trammell's 6'2", 215. I was looking at him the other day going, man, that guy has like linebacker legs.
Yeah, he looks bigger than that, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's just a big, powerful guy. Then they talk about Kelnick and, you know, Tom Murphy, who's like the weightlifting guru on the team, is talking about Kelnick and how strong he is. And so, yeah, this is it's exciting watching these guys. But it's all about the mental part of it. And so that's you know what? We haven't even talked about, like, Seager and Haniger. I mean, those two guys have just been fantastic. You know, as far as the, you know, we talked about the veterans going in, the two pitchers are the ones that have been, I don't want to say disappointing, because I do think Marco Gonzalez is gonna turn it back around. But as far as the veterans go, those guys have done a really good job, Haniger and Seager. I don't know if you saw Haniger in the dugout the other day where he makes that face and sticks his tongue out and he's having a good time. So happy to see him. And last year it was Kyle Lewis was my guy to watch. This year it's Mitch Haniger. And I know he doesn't necessarily fit into the long-term plans. Maybe he does, but we've talked about him possibly being a trade piece down the road. But it sure is nice to see that guy out there having fun and some joy after a 2018 All-Star appearance and then all of the stuff that happened to him.
Well, the minor league season, spring training anyway, is getting underway. So we'll talk about where some of those young stars are starting things out this minor league season and when they're going to be up here with the big club. We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Rick. Wait, Rick, come back.
He's quick. He got
we
out
want
of there.
Baseball.
He's too quick. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto Parts and Service. You heard Riz right there doing radio math. I always love that. He's doing, 5:30, 6:30, 7:30, 8:30. It's 8:30 there.
I was right there with him, man. I'm like, don't even try it, man.
Yeah.
Don't even try it.
It doesn't sound hopeful, Dave. Doesn't. No. I don't hold out a lot of hope for them getting this game in. Doesn't sound like it's lightening up or you know. And he says the crew's just standing around. All right, well, so be it. And it is getting late in the East Coast. I think it should be a rule. If a new stadium is being put up anywhere where there's inclement weather, it's got to have a roof, a retractable roof, a permanent, whatever you want, a permanent roof. But it's got to, you got to have something in place there. With the baseballs, either that or maybe they need to readjust the season and start it in May.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I mean, we're going to spend millions and millions of dollars for some owner, but they can afford it, right?
Yeah, you own a team. You own a franchise. You can kick in. Usually, it's the city that's paying for this anyway. These aren't privately funded arenas and stadiums. So, yeah, usually it's the city. But, yeah, it would behoove a lot of these places, especially even if it's not raining, but it's ice cold in a lot of them. It's freezing to death. So, you know, for a baseball season to start in April and you're playing in Minnesota and you're playing in Baltimore, you're playing in a New York area. I mean, just areas where traditionally April, it's going to be really frosty or it's going to be really wet. You know, in Seattle, obviously, they had the foresight when they built this stadium to put a retractable roof, which means you'll never have a rainout.
Yeah. You know, how many do you think have retractable roofs? How many baseball parks?
That's a good question because I have not kept up with the particulars of each stadium. Yeah. Like I can picture them in my mind, but I have not paid attention to, does it have a retractable roof? Does it not? I
mean, yeah. So some of them are fixed, right? Fixed roofs. But the answer, according to the internet, is eight.
There are eight retractable roofs.
Retractable roofs. And as far as fixed roofs, what, Houston? Is Houston retractable or is it?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think that one's covered. I know down in Arizona, it's covered because I went to one of the first games there for the Diamondbacks back in the day, and the air conditioning was not working so well. But
so a little thick in there.
It was hot in there, but yeah. So I mean, I was kind of going back and forth with a texter, and I was like, "Why don't they put a darn roof? They're cheap. Why skimp? Don't ever skimp on roof."
Yeah. If you're going to spend hundreds of millions and sometimes billions on stadiums, shouldn't it have everything? Shouldn't it take everything into consideration? Yeah. Like if you're going this far, you might as well spend the extra whatever it's going to cost to, you know, ensure that your games aren't rained out or that you're not, you know, if you're in Arizona, like you said, that you're not out there flambéing in the sun, that you're going to provide relief to your fan base out there on some level and get all your games in on time. Yeah. So just a thought, but we'll see what happens if we get another update in the next 20, 25 minutes or so. Meanwhile, as we said before the break, the minor league spring training is underway. And right now, Jared Kelnick will be playing center field. He'll be with Modesto, I believe is where. Yeah. Or no, he's in Arkansas. Excuse me. He's a Double A Arkansas. Julio Rodriguez will be in Everett playing right field. And what I love about this is that it's not the alternate site, and it's not what Kelnick was complaining about last year. You're going up against your own guys, and he seemed like he just really did not enjoy what was going on last year, even though that's got benefit to it as well. He's a young guy. You're getting at-bats against guys who are more experienced. Maybe they're not at the highest level, but there's still a lot of guys that have more experience than you do. So I think there's something to be gained, something to be taken from what happened last year. But this is even better, you know, that they're going to get a chance to face natural opposition, not somebody in a Mariners uniform in an alternate site. They're getting game action out there, which I love. And I think we're going to see Kelnick this year. I don't think we'll see Julio Rodriguez. He's younger, and he's starting out at a lower level in Everett as opposed to Double A Arkansas. But I just think the fact that they've got an actual minor league season that'll be happening is huge for these guys.
Yeah. By the way, let me correct myself. There are eight retractable and fixed roofs: Minute Maid Park, Tropicana Field, Marlins Park, T-Mobile, Rogers Center, Miller Park, and the new Globe Life Park in Arlington.
That's not very many.
I know. I was like, whoa, that can only be the retractable ones. But yeah, that includes all of the 30 teams that only eight have. But
man,
yeah,
figure Minnesota would have been one of those teams, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
yeah. I'm surprised it didn't snow there yesterday.
Yeah, that's not a good weather, you know, and they just built Target Field. It's only been there for a couple of years. Couldn't you guys have coughed up a few more bucks, Minnesota? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. But I was looking through the list that Larry Stone had, and the one that kind of jumped out to me was, he said this one caught my eye. Sam Carlson starting on the mound for Modesto, and you mentioned that, first time in a game situation since 2017. This dude was throwing 97 in high school, Sam Jeez. Carlson. Can you imagine getting up there? I mean, I go to the batting cages, and if it's like 60, 70, I'm having a hard time touching it. But it's amazing. But, yeah, so that's big news. And then, you know, you mentioned it. I understand why Kelnick – I mean, he kind of came out and sort of went over the top about the alternate site thing. And, oh, it's no rainbows and roses or anything like that. You know, you're just kind of playing against your own guys. They're not game-like situations. So it's good to be able to get in that situation for a guy like that.
Yeah, I know everybody's anxious to see these guys come up, and man, we'll see what the Mariners' record is by the time they feel like, you know, that Kelnick's ready or anybody else that we've talked to, you know, whether it's Julio, which again I don't think we're going to see, but you know, we've talked about Cal Raleigh, we've talked about Emerson Hancock and Kirby, and a lot, you know, not everybody's on the same timeline. They're not all coming up together, so we'll see. I know we'll see Kelnick this year, health being the only thing that I think would preclude him from coming up to the big club, or if he just fell on his face and didn't perform well, that's another story, but I don't think anybody expects that. All right, so coming up, a Seattle villain potentially turning into a Seattle hero. We'll tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto Parts and Service. Well, you heard the update there from the voice of the Seattle Mariners, Rick Riz. Tonight's game is officially postponed until tomorrow. A doubleheader scheduled for tomorrow. 2 7-inning games. And before we get into our topic here, Dave, where are you at with 7 innings? I'm much more accepting of that, even though I prefer the 9. I'm much more accepting of that than I am of starting extra innings with a runner on second, if we're talking about some of the new rules in place.
Yeah, with the doubleheader, I get that. I think that makes sense to me. I don't, because they'll get a game in, is it 5 innings? If there's rain and it gets rained out after 5,
yeah,
isn't that considered?
Yeah,
so it makes it official. I'm okay with 7. You know, it's a pretty long day, 2 9-inning games. I mean, really, I mean, the way the Mariners have been playing too, there was a graphic the other day that they're trying to get it, you know, under 3, and the Mariners were like 3:40 or something, 3 hours, 40 minutes. Yeah, so they've had a couple of extra inning games, but still it just tends to be a little slower. So, yeah, that is way more palatable than magically putting a runner on second base.
Just magically. That's perfect. He magically appears on second.
He just appeared there. And like I was saying, like, ugh, you know, shouldn't he have to start at like home plate and run to first and then to second? They just randomly let the guy stroll across the middle of the infield and take his place at second.
Already in scoring position. Yep. So there you go. Doubleheader tomorrow. Bums me out because I'm getting in that mode of where I'm just looking forward to Mariner game every night. You know, it's only been 9, but it just, you get in that mode of where it just becomes part of your routine. And when it's not there, you're like, well, now what do I watch? So we'll watch a lot of baseball tomorrow. But as I said before the break, the potential of a Seattle villain becoming a Seattle hero. And that news centers around one Alex Rodriguez, who I've always defended. I've taken a beating from people out, especially here in Seattle, obviously, because everybody loves to hate Alex for leaving and going to the Texas Rangers. And he told Seattle he wanted to play for a winner. He said that before he was offered $250 million. Okay. So I can't blame the guy for taking an offer that was well over $100 million more than he was receiving from the Mariners. But leave that to the side. The news is that he, along with billionaire Mark, I don't know if it's Lore or Lori, how you say his last name, L-O-R-E, they're finalizing a deal to purchase the T-Wolves and the Minnesota Lynx from Glenn Taylor, who's owned the team forever, it feels like. I'm not sure how many years, 26 years, I think? Yeah, 26 years he's owned the franchise. But I guess how it relates to Seattle fans is that, you know, he was trying to buy the Mets. That didn't work. He wants to own a professional franchise. Now it looks like it's going to be Minnesota. I heard him on Sunday Night Baseball last night. He was on the broadcast, and Vaskirjian, his broadcast partner, was bringing it up. And A-Rod was very sheepish about it. He wasn't offering much of anything in the way of talking about it. But as soon as this made news, the rumors or the conversation about him potentially bringing that team to Seattle started going around. And I'm reading even an article on ESPN written by Adrian Wojnarowski. And he said at the very end of the article, it says that Taylor has discussed keeping the Timberwolves in Minnesota with new ownership, but Rodriguez's ties to Seattle and that city's desire for a return of an NBA franchise could become an issue in the long term. So can you imagine he goes from this reviled, despised individual everybody loves to hate out here in Seattle, and he brings the NBA back to Seattle? Would they build a statue of him? Would there be a mural of him somewhere? You would have. Yeah, I don't care how much you hate A-Rod right now for going to the Texas Rangers. Would you not have to say, welcome back, kid. We love you. Yeah. If he brings the NBA back, come on.
Well, it's funny. I mean, it kind of goes along with what the reputation that Seattle has, the Seattle freeze, you know, that, and people don't wave at each other. They don't say hello, or or sometimes you open a door for somebody and they just walk through it and don't say anything. I like to say, you're welcome.
I do the same thing.
Yeah. They get stung by things. I do not understand that whole thing about people hating A-Rod because of $250 million, as you mentioned. There's no room in my brain for that, to quote Pete Carroll. You know, I mean, why aren't you mad at the Mariners for offering him $251 million if you really want to keep him there? I mean, how in the world could he turn that down?
Yeah, they technically would have had to offer him $253 million because he was offered $252 million from the Texas Rangers, who outbid themselves.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, yeah, that's always a good move. But, yeah, I mean, I don't understand that. But similarly, people are really stung by, you know, there are people that won't drink Starbucks, and there are people that still are incredibly bitter, and, you know, see Danny O'Neill, you know, about the team. And you probably feel that way too, Bob. I mean, I know you're a big NBA fan and a Sonic fan. And so, yeah, I mean, I think he would be a hero. And I think, you know, forgive and forget. I think enough time has passed that the people that really hated A-Rod, I mean, I feel like the younger crowd is like, wait, you're mad at him because of that?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. But some of the older people that have been around for a while that are, you know, around our age, I guess, you know, went through it and it hurt and all that. But I don't understand that. So I would say absolutely he
can
would
you
be
imagine?
A hero.
Can you imagine? And I don't know. It just started, and somebody's saying, if you're quoting Wojnarowski, you're crazy. He's the one that said the deal with the Kings was done. He's not the only one throwing this out there. I'm just reading from his article. I had it in front of me. But Wojnarowski is not the only one bringing up the idea of A-Rod bringing the team back to Seattle. Now, does that mean he's thinking of it? No, I haven't read anything that said he's verbalized anything. And by the way, Glenn Taylor will retain control of the team for 2 years. It's not immediate. So it's not anything that's happening next year or the year after. He's still going to be in control. But just that idea, I just thought, wow, can you imagine where there's just so many people? At least, at the minimum, there would be a lot of conflicted people walking around, right? Like, man, I've spent so many years and so much energy disliking this guy, and now he's bringing an NBA franchise back to Seattle. And who knows if that's in his mind at all, but, boy, he could really, really win over an entire fan base that really reviled him with that one move, couldn't he?
Yeah, well, totally. I just think it would be entirely ridiculous if people didn't, you know, forgive him for that, because, you know, that was just one player leaving. This is a whole franchise. Like, you know, if you're Gary Payton or Sean Kemp, it's like, where are all the, like, record books and the banners and stuff? Are they at, like, a public storage somewhere? I mean, you don't even have a home. And now, you know, you're going to bring a franchise back that you can, you know, hang the banners and all the memorabilia and everything. It's sad, man. I just think, you know, what if the Seahawks, what if it was a similar deal? It's like you don't really have anywhere to go. You're not really part of it. You know, a lot of these franchises, they bring back their old players and, you know, have them come back, whether it's something like, you know, raising the 12th man flag or whatever. They got nothing. They got none of that. So it's sad. So it'd be just a great restoration of that bit of history that was so exciting for Sonic fans.
Yeah, so we'll see. Right, it's at this point, it's just people speculating about what he may do, and he's certainly not the sole owner. He's partnered up with a billionaire, so I don't think it's completely up to him. He's not putting in the majority on this whole thing, but we'll see what comes of it. But it's just an interesting thought to think of the guy that people love to hate or harbor ill will towards could be potentially responsible for bringing the NBA back to Seattle. But an interesting story. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk some more NFL with the professor, John Clayton. He'll join us next here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.